Welcome to the Revital Health Podcast. I'm Jodie Duval, and I'm a functional naturopath in Perth, WA. This is a place where you can expand your knowledge on how to optimise your health and realise your full potential. We'll have cutting-edge information with expert guests and having lots of fun along the way. Get ready to be empowered and motivated to reach your higher vitality and find your ultimate potential. Let's go! Revital Health is a proud member of the Health Optimization Network. Health Optimization Medicine and Practice is a 501c3 non-profit on a mission to educate doctors and practitioners on how to optimize for health rather than treating disease. If you're interested in becoming a practitioner or donating, head over to homehope.org. Revital Health Clinic is the first and only of its kind exclusive health optimization clinic in Australia. With state-of-the-art technology, protocols and personalised healthcare, compounded medicines made specifically to your testing individualities. To find out more, head to revitalhealth.com.au. We are so lucky to be joined today by Dr. Nicholas Fuller. And Nick Fuller is a globally recognised obesity expert and researcher from the University of Sydney. He is a founder of the Interval Weight Loss Program, an evidence-based approach that challenges traditional dieting methods and promotes sustainable weight loss. He has a doctorate of philosophy in obesity treatment, a bachelor degree in human movement, and a master's degree in nutrition and dietetics. Dr. Fuller's work has been published in top medical journals, and he is an author of several best-selling books that provide practical advice on managing weight and maintaining health. Today, we explore Dr. Fuller's innovative approaches to weight management. We talk through his thoughts on weight loss medications, time circadian eating, the importance of resetting the body's set point for long-term success, and a huge component of lifestyle changes, and the ability for us to be able to recognize what sustainable eating habits are and behavioral changes. So really hope you enjoy this fun conversation about a big topic, and leave your thoughts. Let us know if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe and like, and if you want any other topics discussed, please let us know. We will endeavour to bring these topics to you.
Welcome Nick Fuller, or Dr. Nick Fuller, to the show. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks very much for having me on, Jodie. It's a pleasure to be on the podcast. I'm delighted to talk to you.
Thank you. So, look, I am very excited about this topic, and I think a lot of people tuning in will want to hear all of the tips, the tricks, the ins and outs, the hard yakkers around weight loss. And you have 3 degrees and a doctorate, am I right?
Yes, I have done a lot of study. So it's, I guess, been a work in progress for, many, many years. And now I'm lucky to work enough, working in what is Australia's largest weight management service at the University of Sydney and Royal Prince Alfred Hospital. In that facility, we are seeing thousands of patients every year. And unfortunately, these are people that are really struggling, not just with their health, but their weight, because they're out there trying to do something about it, but stuck in that, I guess, yo-yo dieting cycle, not knowing what's truth and what's fact and evidence based. So yeah, they're coming into our clinics. We're seeing those pains and frustrations, and then hopefully getting them onto that path of long-term success.
Yeah. So, you know, as we were just saying, just off recording, it's just such a hard thing to sell to people, because there's not an instant fix, and everything in the world today is instant gratification, and we're given so much so quickly, and not having to really, you know, put the effort, or know where to put the effort in. And this is just such a huge issue within our society. So, you know, 17 years is a huge amount of time to be spending there and on this. I can't wait to pick your brains. But tell me first, how you landed in this space, how you landed here and got into this.
Well, many, many years ago, I guess, I always had this passion for particularly nutrition and that the effect that can have on the body. and probably stemmed from my father's influence, my passion for, you know, sport and health. And then I guess really wanting to help and understand what was happening with people at a physiological level. So it's one thing to, you know, for them to be wanting to do something about their health, but why was it that people continued to get the same old results? Why were they getting weight loss followed by weight regain time and time again? And that sort of, you know, moved me from sports science and nutrition studies to then a doctorate in obesity or weight management to understand what was happening within a person's body when they were losing weight. Because I guess, you know, we need to put an end to that. We need to help people regain control of their health and their weight, and for people to understand that they're not failing due to a lack of willpower. They're not failing due to that lack of discipline. They're often sticking to their diets and they're doing such a great job of adhering to these programs. But what they didn't understand was that, and what a lot of people don't understand, is that their body is going into shutdown mode. And that's what, I guess, where my career and trajectory moved towards, understanding the biological protections in place when a person's losing weight. And then the next phase was, okay, look, we know that's happening. What can we do to actually switch that off and help a person firstly break that yo-yo dieting cycle and then give them some evidence-based care program to help them succeed long-term with their weight loss and regain control of their health.
Yeah, wow. It's such a beautiful place to land, because you would see so much reward and success with clients or patients, and to see them in that space and finally happy, you know, at their set point, you know. So I'd love to talk to you about all of that. And I know you've created the Interval Weight Loss Program. And I just love the way that you talk about the calories in, calories out, you know, the myths around weight loss and the set point, because it's something that I've talked about for many years. But also to know now that this is research-backed information, this makes me so happy. So talk us through your program firstly, and then we'll dive into maybe some aspects around the myths of weight loss.
Absolutely. I guess, you know, to answer that point too that you bring up, and that concept known as our set point, it's probably a good way or a good starting point, because many of us might be familiar with this set point, because it's that body weight that you've been stuck at for a long period of time. And I'm talking about the plateau, and I'm talking about the weight that you've been stuck at in your adult years, typically over the age of 18 or 20, the weight that you keep bouncing back to with every diet or weight loss program that you follow. So to give a real life example, your starting weight might be 92 kilos. You then lose 10 kilos and you go down to 82. But what happens is you claw back to that set point. Your body starts shutting down, going into survival mode, and doesn't just see you go back to the 92, but it sees you put on the plus GST, the plus 1 or 2 kilograms to prepare for that next bout of starvation. So the set point, the easiest thing to think of with your set point is it's the weight your body is protecting. It's the weight you always rebound back to. And unfortunately with dieting, our research is showing that it's actually speeding up the weight problem. So you don't just go from 92 to 82 back to 92. As I just mentioned, you go from 92 to 82 back to 93, 94.
Yeah,
you actually you diet yourself into a worse off position. And there's some really good evidence and research looking at twins where they follow them up over in 5-year increments over a 25-year period. And they found that the twin that had been intentionally trying to lose weight throughout their lifetime, or it had been dieting throughout their lifetime, was always heavier than the twin that had never dieted. So it's obviously independent of genetic factors. And this is why it's so important for people to understand the long-term damage that they're doing through that yo-yo or cyclic dieting or weight loss, weight followed by weight regain.
Yeah.
Now, that's one thing to understand, set point. And I guess the second thing is to understand why we are actually protecting our set point. Now, the minute you start losing weight, and I'm talking just a clinically significant amount of weight, and that's about 3 kilos of weight loss, or about 5% of your total body weight, depending on your start weight, your body goes into survival mode. It goes into shutdown. And we've found that a person's metabolism starts lowering. So you start burning less calories at rest. Your appetite hormones go haywire. Okay. You've got extra, I guess, signals or acting on your brain telling you to eat more. One of those is ghrelin. It's the hunger hormone that goes up between meals, telling you to go and eat more. When you start dieting and starving yourself, ghrelin levels go through the roof. But there's other things happening too. Your adrenal glands start pumping out more cortisol, your thyroid glands, stop doing what they're supposed to be doing. The thyroid hormones are suppressed, which is the gatekeeper to your metabolism, which again is not good because that's the determining factor of how quick your metabolism is moving along. But you've also got changes in things like your brain function. You start seeking out those foods high in fat and high in sugar. The minute you take them out of your diet, your brain is going into this survival mechanism going, hey, hang on, what's going on here? I can't, I'm not going to survive and procreate if I continue to lose weight. So it shuts down in order to claw back to its start point. It does not know any better. Now, unfortunately, these are our genes left over from tens of thousands of years ago, and we have our ancestors to thank. Our genes have not changed in the modern day environment. What has changed is the food that surrounds us. It's on every corner of every block. We have a hard time saying no to it. We're not getting great movement. We're driving everywhere from A to B. We're on our devices all night, which are affecting our sleep health. And consequently, our weight's going up by about 0.5 to 1 kilo every year. And then we compound that through dieting, which accelerates the weight gain even more. So you end up putting on the 1 to 2 kilos every year, instead of the population norm of 0.5 to 1 kilo or 2 pounds. Now, that brings me to point three, which is, I guess, your question that you asked at the start, like, what is this IWL program? Well, that's another part of what I've been, I guess, researching here at the University of Sydney in RPA Hospital. Is it's one thing to understand what's happening within a person's body when they're losing weight, but what can we do to switch it off? So what we then translated was this IWL program, or interval weight loss program. It's not to be confused with intermittent fasting, and we can get into the nitty-gritty detail of that soon. It just happens to be called interval weight loss, or IWL. And as of this year, it's now available as a native app. You can go to the Apple Store and Google Play Store. And importantly, follow evidence-based care in the palm of your hand. And what it's doing is switching off the body's usual triggers that send you back to your start point. So the two main things that we're doing with the IWL program is firstly teaching a person how to develop healthy habits that last a lifetime so that they stick and you can and stick with them. But in more importantly, prescribing a specific weight loss methodology so that your body's physiology doesn't come into play. And we get a person to actually lose weight in intervals. And what it looks like visually is a step-down approach where you lose a couple of kilos, you then have to maintain it during the next month. You then can go on and lose another couple of kilos, then you can go on and maintain it again over the course of a year. Our randomized controlled trials then show that you're losing about 11 kilos, 12 kilos of weight loss, but importantly, not seeing that weight regain that you typically get with diets, where you might lose the 10 or 12 kilos in 10 to 12 weeks, but you get the U or V-shaped response where you go back to your start point. So hopefully that gives you, I guess, a high-level overview of firstly, our set point, what it is, why we are failing. It's not due to our lack of willpower. It's actually due to our body's physiology, these biological protections that are in place, preventing you from succeeding. And then thirdly, an evidence-based program to help you regain control of your health and weight that is turning off the body's usual response to weight loss. And remembering that anyone struggling with their weight, first-line therapy should be lifestyle intervention. You can succeed long-term with lifestyle intervention, which involves changes with your diet, exercise, and sleep, but only if you're following care from healthcare professionals, not celebrities, not social media, you know, influencers that have not studied the science of obesity. Our body is a weird and wonderful beast, but it's working against us. And you need to be able to understand that and I guess then apply the principles of a healthy lifestyle so that you don't get that usual response to weight loss that you've always got.
And then, yeah, and I love how you put it in. So it's simple, it's complex, but it's simple, you know. So these are the stepped approaches, and this is the way to guide you there. Because I think, you know, I'm in a personalized medicine field. So when you're looking at celebrities, when you're looking at all these things, you never get the full picture. You don't know how that person's body is physiologically working. You know, so in my sort of practice, the way that I practice is in health optimization medicine. So I look at different biomarkers. We look at metabolites. We look at different intricacies for the body's makeup, you know, nutrition and proteins and amino acids. So when you're looking at that, you know what is missing for that person. Do they have thyroid issues? Do they have this? So when you're correcting this under the care of a clinician, and then you're adding this weight loss program with the lifestyle factors that's really helping to support them to get to that next point with lifestyle factors they wouldn't have normally known how to do themselves, it's so powerful. It's so powerful. And when, you know, coming back to that sort of evolutionarily derived, you know, where we are designed this way, and we can't come against that. We can't stop that. We don't know, we can't change that physiology of our body's protection mechanisms, like you were saying. So it's a fascinating way that, you know, it makes so much sense. That's how you can create safety back into the body, to know that that's where it's safe again. You know, that's that correct set point where it can actually safely lose weight and not feel like it's under threat. And I've not heard it put this way before, so it's incredible. And I think it's the applicable knowledge and the applicable programs that actually help people get to that next point, which is fascinating. And we live in, you know, I was doing a lecture yesterday on the CDR response, so the cell danger response, and just going through some of the factors of the sort of summer and winter. And we live in a constant summer, you know, the overload of foods, the sitting down, the, you know, not being challenged enough, maybe less exercise and overconsumption of the wrong foods, like you were saying. So we're fighting up against that environmental change that we've had come against, up against us. You know, we're not living in an age of only stress that is from a mental load perspective, not a stress from a physiological perspective as well. So yeah, I just love all of that.
Yeah, you're 100% right. And I guess to really, there's a take-home message there that, you know, we unfortunately do put our health sometimes down the bottom of the priority list, and it does suffer as a result, but it's the most important thing. And when you are going out to do something about your health and weight, it's then making sure that you turn to evidence-based care, because it, like you said, it is actually quite simple. But this is not about just, you know, eat less, move more. That couldn't be further from the truth. All that does is result in your body's physiology coming into play and it's shutting down and you getting the same response you've always done. It's not about starvation. It's not about counting calories and weighing out grams of food. It's much simpler than that. And that's what I guess the principles of the IWL program are teaching as well.
Yeah. And I think, you know, and just furthering on from that, it's so simple, but there is so much misinformation out there at the moment. You know, the amount of times that I hear clients coming in, you know, just even yesterday, but it's constant. You know, I'm not eating anything, but I'm still putting on weight. I don't eat, but I'm completely, you know, I'm 20 or 30 kilos overweight. Like, why? I'm exercising so much yet, and I can't lose the weight. So there's so many times, and people are still going by the calories in or move more, eat less, calories in, calories out mode. But we can see it's not working. So I don't think there's ever been an evidence-based program created like you, and you know this more than I do, that actually shows this, because everyone's still been going by the old ways, the old methods.
and particularly one that's actually working with our physiology. And I guess that's, you know, probably a good time to highlight that we move from diet to diet, and they largely grow momentum or gain momentum because of big names that get behind them. So if we go back sort of 10 years, it was the, you know, and it's still there as well, but the keto movement. If we go back, you know, a few more decades, you know, back to the 70s and 80s, we were talking, you know, low carb, the Atkins revolution. Now, what we're talking about at the moment is intermittent fasting. There's different derivatives of it, you know, whether it's a 24-hour fast or a 5-2 or a 16-8 eating window. It doesn't really matter. But what the research is showing is that they're not achieving any better results than their predecessors. There is no questioning that they get, they achieve short-term weight loss. But they're also achieving long-term weight regain. You will get the same response you've always got with every other diet approach, and that's weight loss followed by weight regain. And that's what long-term randomized controlled trials show. So when it comes to, I guess, you know, is it, and the new diet intermittent fasting, is that the answer? Well, unfortunately, it's not. You will see that short-term success like you used to see with the low-carb Atkins revolution way back decades ago. But all that's happened is diets have just morphed from one thing to another, but really the same thing, and that's prescribing eat less and move more. And the eat less usually comes from take out this food or take out this food group. And the worrying thing is that often it's that food group or food that you're taking out that's good for your long-term health. And one minute it's carbs, the whole grain carbs. The next minute the scapegoat's fat. We all fear the F word. And then it's dairy. So now, you know, we're sort of just moving from one food or food group to another and repurposing or remarketing what we have been doing for the last five decades. But science has shown that it's not achieving better or more superior in, outcomes. It's weight loss followed by long-term weight regain. And I guess the other important point to sort of draw upon what you're mentioning is that, so people might be thinking, okay, it's not, if it's not eat less, move more, then what is it? Well, look, there's no questioning that to achieve weight loss, you do need to be in a an energy deficit, I guess, mode, but that doesn't come from deprivation. That actually comes from eating more. So when our clients are coming in and they're starving themselves, they're miserable and they're suffering from a physical and also mental health point of view because of that cycle that they're going through, we're actually saying, well, stop doing what you're doing. Stop depriving yourself. What we're going to start to do now is build or regain control, regain, I guess, a healthy relationship with food by getting you to eat more, by getting you to focus on more wholesome, nutritious food. And they end up eating two, three, four times what they used to eat, but we see an incidental decrease often in their calorie intake through that change to a more wholesome, nutritious diet plan. And that's because they're eating more of those nature's treats, more of the foods that are naturally high in sugar, naturally high in fat. They give you the high you're looking for, but they also give you the nutrition your body needs and fill you up for long periods afterwards. So really that message there is eat more, not less. If you're depriving yourself and you're not getting results and you are clinically diagnosed as, say, overweight or in the obesity range, stop depriving yourself. Unfortunately, you've done a lot of damage to your metabolism. We do know also from our research that every diet you go on, your metabolism drops by 15% that we cannot account for as clinicians and scientists. There's an expected drop in your metabolism, which will come from the decrease in body weight, because you're losing muscle and you're losing body fat, but there's a further 15% decrease that we can't account for, and that's just your body going into shutdown mode. And the worrying thing is that it doesn't go back to its baseline level after you regain the weight. Your metabolism stays suppressed. And a good example is from The Biggest Loser, where they measured their metabolism at the start of the contest. Sure, this is an extreme example, but it also applies to the general population. They measure their metabolism at the start. They measure it again at the end after they lost a significant amount of weight. Of course, the metabolism's decreased, but it's decreased beyond what we can account for by that 15%. And then they regain all of that weight, sadly. But the metabolism hasn't gone back to where it was. It stays suppressed, which means they continue to burn less calories at rest and they continue to put on more weight than they lost. So you not only are you doing damage with the dieting and yo-yo cycling and the deprivation that you're imposing on your body, but unfortunately it makes it harder to then lose weight with every subsequent bout of dieting you go on, because your body's getting very good at saying, hang on, that's not a good position to be in. My body doesn't need to be or want to be losing weight again in order to procreate and survive. So you find it harder and harder as you age to then lose weight. Yeah. And it can be a frustration that we have with our patients on IWL. It's like, well, why aren't I losing weight from the get-go? Because we're actually teaching them that firstly, we need to restore your metabolism. Weight loss will come, but it may not come straight away because of the years or decades you've imposed of damage on your body through dieting. But your health will be improving from day one. And that's why it's important to focus on health, not weight.
Yeah, absolutely. As you're saying this, sort of, there's certain things going through my mind in relation to, you know, life quality of life for a lot of people, because they're so purely focused on this. Even eating disorders. I talked to a doctor, Dr. Susan, on the podcast not long ago, and we're talking about psychedelics, but more around body dysmorphia. And it's fascinating the connection, obviously, that you can't separate them, because mental health is health, and also the mental health associated with food, but also media input and all these external factors that are actually driving us to be having certain beliefs about our body, and therefore escalating this fact of in and out and then ruining metabolism along the way as well. But then, you know, we've got so much marketing and money put into supplements, drugs, you know, all these quick fixes that are promising things. And I think if you're willing to comment on everything that we've got going on at the moment with Ozempic and all the drugs that are associated with these quick, fast weight loss, from my clinical perspective, when I'm seeing clients come back after being on these medications, I'm seeing a huge increase an overset point makeup from when they've actually come off these medications. And then for damaging their health along the way as well. I don't see their health improving from that, unfortunately.
You make a very good point, Jodie. I mean, when it comes to, I guess, medicines, you know, we obviously investigate natural medicines for the treatment of weight, but we also investigate pharmaceutical drugs. Now, like any medicine, they work while we're taking them. And in this instance, the new wave or the new class of drugs are working on our appetite, those appetite signals getting sent to your brain telling you when and when you shouldn't eat.
Yeah.
And they suppress your appetite. Mm-hmm. Now, unfortunately, the minute you come off them, you go back to where you started. Research is showing that you regain the weight.
Yeah.
And you can end up in a worse off position. But the other important point to make is that, like you said, it's not the magical cure. You still need to follow the principles of an evidence-based lifestyle program to regain control of your health. You can't expect just to be injecting a drug and still eat poorly, not move healthily and get poor sleep, because you're not changing your lifestyle. You're not going to get the long-term improvements in your health.
Yeah.
So you still need to be seeing healthcare professionals to regain control of your health and weight, to ensure that you're overhauling your lifestyle in a way where you can form habits that last a lifetime.
Yeah. And those habits are so hard to break, aren't they? It's the cycling. And it's something that is the hardest thing that I find with clients and patients to actually get over, and to be constantly re-reminded of those habits and made them accountable for those habits. And once they're there, they are happy because they've reset those habits in line. But it's about actually being accountable and putting that in place, because there's so much influence. You know, I find the hardest thing is family life, social eating, A lot of people will go back to old habits very quickly when they're going out, socially and around their family. There's a lot of peer pressure, even within families, to eat a certain way, especially if it's been done for so many generations as well. So, and there's a whole lot of psychology related input that's required to retrain to we've got a plastic brain, so we can change those habits, but it's not always easy, and that's that the hard work is put in for the reward at the end.
Yeah, it doesn't happen overnight.
No.
You're entirely right. That plasticity of the brain exists. The hard wiring is, in fact, soft wiring, and we can change our food choices over time. It's just like strengthening a muscle in the gym. If you repeatedly apply positive and healthy food choices, eventually they become the default. Eventually they become the go-to. So when you're getting that urge to eat something sugary or high in fat, what are you doing? You're reaching for nature's treats, the fruits, the nuts and the seeds, because those foods still release all those feel-good chemicals in the brain, but they're nutritious and make us feel great afterwards, as opposed to the fast and processed foods that we reach for when we're looking for that high, which might give us a short-term hit, but then long-term pain afterwards when we feel guilty for eating it, but also the poor nutrition that they often or very little nutrition they contain. And the other important point is that you can't just expect to be doing this for a week or two and think, oh, that's it. The
Nothing's
habit's going to
happened.
become, yeah, well, exactly, nothing's happening. It should be happening by now. It actually takes, on average, 66 days, more than 2 months of repeatedly applying these positive, healthy choices until that new healthy habit becomes the way of life. So an example might be you're constantly going to the vending machine at 3 o'clock in the afternoon when you're looking for that high. Now, this doesn't mean saying no all of the time, because that's what diets teach us to do. They teach us to cut out all of our favorite foods or favorite food groups. And eventually we say, what the hell? And we don't just go back in a small and I guess gradual way. We end up eating the whole packet of Tim Tams instead of just one. This is about saying no most of the time. So you can go and have your favorite food, but it's just the once to twice a week maximum. It's not the everyday occurrence, because these foods still play an important role in the modern day environment. They still give us pleasure and they can still be incorporated into a healthy lifestyle. We're not telling you to cut them out. That cutting out, I guess, mentality does not work. This is why diets work short term, because they tell you to cut the foods out. They get drastic short term results on the scales. You feel great, the number's going down, but then you go back to your old habits and your body's physiology starts to fight the weight loss. It's about saying no most of the time. So 6 to 7 days out of the week, you're saying no to the vending machine. You're reaching for the nature's treats. Trust me, science shows that they still give you that high and hit you're looking for. You're getting all those feel-good endorphins released in the brain. The dopamine's, starting to get released, the learning chemical next time you see it, which means you go and reach for it again. And eventually they become the default because you're changing that wiring of the brain. And then they become your go-to 6 or 7 days out of the week, as opposed to the processed or fast food from the vending machine 6 or 7 days out of the week. And it could be this sort of example could be applied to any of your favorite foods or habits that you're trying to break. Okay, so you've got to make sure that you have realistic expectations, firstly, of how long it takes. And secondly, do not apply the mentality or approach where you cut it out altogether. You can still allow yourself the favorite food, but it's just not the everyday occurrence. If you do cut it out, trust me, the cravings will only come back. Your brain activity starts to change where you start to seek out those foods. And I just gave you a good example with the packet of chocolate biscuits.
I always tell my clients that we're natural born rebels. So if we're told not to do something, we're going to go for it anyway. So replace it with something better. That's better
Definitely.
for you. That's more whole. That's supersized. I call it it's a super health.
Yes,
You've
spot
got
on.
extra to it. So what, Nick, in terms of timing of foods, now I've done quite a lot of research into sort of circadian rhythms, and Sachin Panda is really good at talking about this and timed eating ideas, not just intermittent eating habits, obviously, but organ related, cellular clock related time to eating. Is there anything that you've seen or have discovered around this as well?
We have. We've found that the time of when you eat does matter, particularly when it comes to the calories you burn from a particular food or meal that you're consuming. And we have it the complete wrong way around in the modern day environment. We should be loading up the start of the day and tapering off and eating less at the end of the day. Our body burns the energy or calories from a meal 2.5 times more efficiently in the morning compared to the evening. Now, what I mean by that is we sit down participants to a meal containing X calories in the morning. We measure the thermic effect of that food. Then we do the same thing by giving them the same meal at the end of the day. When they eat that meal at the start of the day, their body is burning the calories 2.5 times more efficiently. They're better able to use that fuel. So what you should be doing is actually eating from big to small and tapering off the food volume throughout the day. And unfortunately, 90, 95% of us are actually doing the other way, where most of our food consumption happens at the end of the day. We rush out the door, maybe with a kid under each arm. We grab a coffee. We might be lucky to have something mid-morning, but we tend to not eat until lunchtime. Then we ramp up our food intake towards the end of the day because our body's craving calories, it's needing energy, and our dinner becomes the biggest meal of the day. But from that circadian rhythm point of view and thermic effect of food, it's the wrong way around. That's not good for weight control, and you need to start to change how you orientate your food throughout the day. And that means starting to wake up and break that fast by having something small. You're not going to feel hungry, particularly if you've done the same thing for years or decades. And then maybe have something again at mid-morning. And over time, your appetite will start to pick up in the morning. But it's going to take again a couple of months potentially for that to happen. And then eventually your appetite will slow down at the end of the day. It will reduce. You'll have less ghrelin acting on the clever part of the brain called the hypothalamus telling you to eat more. And you'll feel less hungry. You'll sit down and still enjoy an important meal from a social and cultural perspective, but portion size is not the focus. Conversation and food is, as opposed to how much you're actually eating at that time. So think big to small, because that is how your body best uses the calories you're putting into it.
Yeah, the breakfast like the king.
Yes, exactly.
Gosh, I think you must have had an insight into my life this morning. Kids out the door,
Yeah,
coffee.
it's hard. It's not easy. But there are breakfast is actually one of the easiest meals. It's something you can still eat very nutritious and healthily just by grabbing something as you go out the door. It's very important to have something, not nothing.
Yeah, absolutely. I try and load my coffees up with a lot of fat. So I hope that I've got some calories coming in that way. Good fats. Amazing. Yeah, so eating also, and the body gets obviously into a rhythm as well. So as you're saying, like it will take a little time, but there is moments of then your body is going to be becoming used to that signaling at each of those times of the days. So it's going to become easier. And I think that's a good thing for people to know that it gets easier. But you have to use initial willpower to start with and ideas around why we're doing this and keep that willpower strong.
Yeah, and start to eat a little bit less in the evening. So you do wake up a little bit hungry in the morning, but do it gradually. It's not going to happen, remember, overnight. It does take quite some time.
But I think it's good just to have that expectation. So a lot of people don't even know that expectation of 66 days that it takes to actually create these new habits. If people know that and they have a foresight of knowing that that's what I'm aiming for, it makes it so much easier. You know what you're aiming for then.
You do a realistic goal.
Absolutely. So what other myths have you come across? And then I'll dive into some maybe exciting terms of weight loss research, and anything technology-wise and all that sort of thing. But what other myths do you hear quite a lot of that we need to sort of squash right
It's a really good point. I mean,
now?
we touched on it lightly. The scapegoats for our waistline, the carbs, the dairy, the fats. Again, it's much simpler than that. And from a health point of view, all of these foods play an important role. But you need to be, again, retraining our brain towards the healthier option. So when it comes to carbs, they are not going to prevent you from succeeding on your weight loss journey. They actually help you. But you've got to move towards whole grain carbs. I'm not saying that you should be filling up on white refined packet carbohydrates. It's about filling up on foods that are nutritious, packed with fiber, vitamins and minerals that are going to fill you up for long periods of time, that are also going to prevent disease like type 2 diabetes and heart disease. So when it comes to making changes to your diet, stop restricting the carbs. Every meal just needs to be balanced. It needs to have a source of whole grain carb. It needs to have a source of protein, and it needs to have a source of healthy fat. Now, a good, easy example to think of, again, is breakfast. Perhaps it's more relevant on the weekends where you've got a bit more time, but it could be something like your whole grain toast with some avocado and an egg or eggs as your protein source. Mm-hmm. If it's something like your cereal when you're running out the door, it could be the oats with some nut butter and milk and berries and honey mixed in there, you know, to get your high for nature's treat. So just thinking that every meal has got to be balanced with a source of whole grain carb, a source of protein, and a source of good fat. Mm-hmm. That's the easy and sensible approach to it. And we know that works long term from not just a health point of view, but a weight management point of view. If you're incorporating those three macronutrients at each meal, you will get success. Do not think that you need more protein. We're getting plenty of protein in the modern day environment. Do not think that fats are going to make you fat. That's not true. We're just sort of switching to make healthier fat choices to move away from the processed and fast foods, and that whole grain carbs play an important role too. So give those, I guess, the respect and importance they need by including them at every meal. So that's probably the best way of summarizing, you know, what are some of those common food myths. You have to sort of block out that noise, because often those foods that we're told to cut out are cut out because they give us really quick results on the scales. Yep. Now, carbs are a good example. For every gram of carbohydrate, you actually bind 3.7 grams of water. So what do? I take out carbs, I jump on the scales, and great, the number's going down. I'm excited. Carbs are the problem. I've got to keep restricting carbs. I then have another meal contains carbs, the number's going back up. And I blame my weight gain or weight change on the carbohydrate-containing meal. That is just a change in your body water content. It is not a true change in fat mass. And that's why we get people just to measure weight once per week on the IWL app or program. So you're monitoring the trend in weight over time. So pick a day, same time, same day, same clothing, and just monitor that trend over time, because you're looking for changes in fat mass. You're not looking for those day-to-day fluctuations or within-day fluctuations that happen within meals.
And that's a really good point across women's cycles too, because I have that as a thing. Yeah, with women, they're like, oh my gosh, I put on 2 kilos. I'm like, well, where are you in your cycle? Oh yeah, I'm almost getting my period. I'm like, okay, well, that's why, you know. But yes, you're right. So with the carbs, it's such a quick way of getting rid of water, you know. And one of the common things that when I'm trying to get clients to eat breakfast, or they're choosing the wrong foods, I think, and glucose is something I want to bring up now, that glucose regulation and control. You know, when you're poor sleep, you know, lifestyle habits are bad. So, you know, sleep's been bad, stayed up too late, been on the phone, you know, scrolling till 1 a.m., gone to bed, had to wake up early, trying to get out of bed, you're tired, your glucose regulation's down, you're going to eat, go for like a really quick carb, so you're going to eat, you know, high sugared honey oats or something like that, and then they come and they say to me, like, I'm starving, all I do is I eat breakfast, and then I'm really hungry afterwards, it's not working, it's making me more hungry. I'm like, yeah, but your glucose is now rebounding, you know, so it's an interesting thing about, and I think that's so important around those three main groups, because it's going to help that regulation and that support, and then the lifestyle habits on top of that, and then you're up for success.
Yeah, very much. You're spot on. And that's why sleep health is also important, because if you get a poor night's sleep, it actually affects your lifestyle choices the next day. Because not only is your brain sort of saying, okay, the easier option here is just to go to the vending machine and to get the process and quick fix, but also ghrelin levels change after sleep deprivation. That is the hunger hormone acting on your brain. Remember that clever part of the brain, the hypothalamus, telling you to eat more. So you feel hungrier. That's not a subjective feeling. That's actually objectively happening within a person's body when we measure their appetite hormones after sleep deprivation. So there's a reason why you're not only going for health unhealthier food choices, more likely to neglect the exercise because you feel tired, but also your appetite's gone up because ghrelin levels are surging. And that's why you've got to focus on sleep health too. It's not just food, it's not just activity, but it's also sleep. Now, you mentioned devices, a simple and easy one and a habit we have to change is the use of devices and technology of an evening. So we just tell our patients, you need to have at least 1 hour before bed where you turn off those devices. You put them away, you're not scrolling, you're not looking at, you know, tablets, watching TV, whatever it might be. You need to unwind in a different way to give your chance or your brain the chance to know it's nighttime instead of daytime. Because those devices are suppressing melatonin production. They're emitting blue light. They're suppressing melatonin production in the brain, telling you it's daytime instead of nighttime. You have a hard time falling asleep. You have a hard time staying asleep. And like you just said, you wake up sleep deprived. You go for the easy food option and it's just a flow-on effect for the next day and days to come. So make small gradual changes. And I guess that's why we get people to work on one habit at a time, to work on one principle at a time, and then you go on and move and master the next one.
Yeah, it has to be done. It can't be loaded up at once. Absolutely not. But yeah, I think a lot of people don't realize that, you know, light or white light at night or artificial light at night, Alan, as we call it, will cause the body to think it's in midday. You know, it will think it's right in the middle of the day. So yeah, hunger cues are still there, I imagine, you know, so you're going to have the physiological reactions like it is daytime, not nighttime to rest. So that's so many different impacts on the body's recovery and healing and response and weight and glucose and sleep quality, and it's just huge. And that's one major thing we've noticed in this sort of realm of 50 years is that increase of that white light at night.
Definitely, it's something that we have to, you know, I guess rethink and change our relationship with these devices and screens, particularly in the evening time, particularly in that time before bed, because you've got to ideally work towards a 2 hour window. We have that no blue light, because trust me, you're going to start seeing a significant improvement in your sleep quality and also the latency time in terms of getting to sleep.
Yeah.
Okay, there's a reason why you're struggling to fall asleep and then stay asleep. Not just the modern day stresses, but the devices and screens that are emitting that blue light, suppressing melatonin production in the brain. So sleep health needs to be focused on for the majority of the population, but it's often neglected in a lifestyle program. And that's why the pillars need to be not just food, not just exercise, but also sleep. Often we just focus on food and think that everything else is okay. If we just deprive ourselves of food and count the calories, restrict, 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 we'll get the weight loss we're looking for. But we've talked about the reasons why that doesn't work. And remember, what we're doing is forming habits that last a lifetime to improve our health.
Yeah, and to pass on to generations as well.
Absolutely.
Which is so important. Yeah, amazing. So, yeah, so onto like devices, yes, but technologies that you've seen in this sort of space that's been good to pay attention to, and maybe some to like, well, let's just put those aside because they're not even worthwhile, you know, looking at. So what have you sort of seen in that space?
So I guess, look, in terms of, you mean use of devices of an evening time?
Sort of device, like technology. So, you know, there's so many different like Whoop bands or Oura rings.
Sure.
And there's so much more coming to the market.
There's so
and
much data.
It's so much data. And so, you know, what's worth our while and for the common person and what's, you know, here I say as I'm wearing an Oura ring, but also what's not worth it? Like, what do we not need to be focused on? Because it takes away, as we've talked about, from the main factors of actually inputting the healthy habits and lifestyle. So what can assist and what can't? That's, I guess, my question.
Good question. Now, I think we're getting way too caught up in that nitty-gritty detail when it comes to all that data we're inundated with now. Data when it comes to calories, data when it comes to physical exertion, stress levels, sleep quality. You've just got to take it a whole step back. Okay. It again is so much simpler than that. Instead of worrying about that nitty-gritty detail, instead just make a simple change, like we were talking about screens, so we can focus on the screens, switching them off for 1 to 2 hours before bed. And then, yes, you will start to see hopefully that improvement in sleep without having to worry about the data that you're collecting. So yes, they all play great, roles in different ways, but too much data is overwhelming. And we're not focusing on the small things. So really, when it comes to calories and calorie counting, forget that because there's too much inaccuracy. We've found that, you can have up to 20% inaccuracy in terms of the calories reported for a particular food. Plus, we don't absorb a lot of the calories from certain foods, like nuts. They go through the gastrointestinal tract undigested. Vegetables are another good example. So what you see in terms of the absolute calorie number on the nutritional panel is not necessarily or not the real number in terms of what the body's absorbing. When it comes to activity monitors, again, we can get far too caught up. What we do need to get an idea of is how many steps we're doing each day. We're doing far too few of those. And then gradually incorporating movement in your incidental lifestyle so that you're not just going, okay, I'm going to start a gym program or this boot camp and do it for a short period of time only to get injured and then have numerous setbacks afterwards. This is about making small gradual changes, remember, to your lifestyle. So with activity, you'd focus on incidental activity by just looking at your steps. Then over time, you can start focusing on different things like high intensity versus low intensity and different devices and wearables, gadgets can give you that feedback. But you don't need to really worry about that nitty-gritty detail. And then the last one is something like body fat. We start jumping on these scales nowadays and look, oh, the body fat change has gone from this to this. But again, they're largely inaccurate. They're not giving real useful data. So that's why we just get a person to monitor their weight and waist circumference over time and look for those trends. And don't just focus on one metric or measure of health or change. Focus on numerous measures. So we use weight and waist for anthropometrics, but you can also use blood tests for changes or improvements in your health over time. So stop worrying about all that data. Take it back a step and focus on, I guess, the higher, broader picture so you can just make gradual changes because those gradual changes will see the improvements you're looking for anyway.
I love all of that. But I want to pull apart or pull aside the fact that you said that calories that we eat, and one of my, and I'm sorry to the health coaches out there, but one of my almost pet hates is this dive in. And for a lot of clients, it can be so overwhelming of make sure you're doing this and make sure your amount of this and do that. And I'm like, well, it's not correct. There's the information you're getting is never is so variable, and there are so many other variables outside of that. So that is just an amazing thing to hear. And I think we need to shout that out to the rooftops. But isn't the human condition just a fascinating thing where we're always trying to reach for these really fancy and shiny things to help us to almost distract us away from the facts of the real work, of the actual simple, free, almost free, the things that we could actually do that doesn't cost a thing. That just is the hard work that we have to put in and the consistency that we have to have, day in, day out, and the incidental. And I love that. I call when I'm prescribing exercise to people, I'm like, create more incidental movement in your day. Get up from your desk, go for a walking meeting. Those things count. Whereas people are like, well, I didn't get to the gym and do my hard yakka for 30 minutes. I'm like, well, that's all right. How many walking steps did you do? How many handstands did you do with your kids? How much dancing parties did you go to? So it's all the things that we forget. We always drive and actually come away from joy and fun and have to spend money on the top down things. But we've got so much available to us that we can just do for free.
Look, you've summed it up perfectly. It couldn't be, more accurate in terms of what you just described. It is really, I guess, again, we've said this, but it's so much simpler than what we make it out to be. But we have to take ownership for of our health, and our lifestyle. Make small gradual changes, and don't worry about all of that noise. Data, whatever it might be, that's distracting you from, I guess the real change that's needed. So work on one thing. When you've mastered that, work on the next thing. Sure, all of those other nice to haves can be part of that journey, but don't get caught up in it, okay? Because it's distracting you from and blocking you from real long-term success.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And I was going to ask you, Nick, is like, so your three smarter, not harder steps to weight loss, but I think you've just covered them there. But if you wanted to just do a quick, like, one, two, three, and then people know sort of where they can aim for.
I think, look, there's so many, but when it comes to weight, monitor trend over time. Don't jump on the scales every day and worry about those day-to-day fluctuations. They mean nothing. One time point per week, same time, same day, like we do with the IWL program. Second thing is that food is far simpler than we make it out to be. Don't worry about counting calories, weighing out grams of food. Simply work with your body. Start eating from big to small. Because remember, you're burning the calories more efficiently in the morning versus the evening time. It's more important to load up the start and taper off towards the end of the day. And then the third take-home message is that food needs to be balanced. All of these macronutrients play an important role. Every meal should be balanced. It should have a source of whole grain carb. It should have a source of protein, it should have a source of healthy fat. Don't be scared of the carbs, the dairy, the fats, whatever it might be that's the diet program that's sort of led you that way. It couldn't be further from the truth. Start following evidence-based care because then you will regain control of your health and your weight, and you'll find it is easy. It's not going to happen overnight, but it's going to happen. Trust me.
Oh, beautiful. That's a beautiful summary, beautiful points. And I'm so excited for people to listen to this and start to take action in their own lives. But Nick, where can we find you? Where can we find the program? How do people sign up? I know you mentioned at the start it's actually free. I think it's free to sign up to at the moment for people to run through. Yeah, so give us details of where to find you and where to contact.
Look, there's many different ways. I guess it sort of started as a journey as books. So you can go to your local library. You can borrow an interval weight loss book. That might be a great starting point. Read the book,
Awesome.
understand the science behind why you're failing or continue to fail long term, and what the IWL program is based upon, particularly these six principles. But then you can also follow the program in the palm of your hand. And yes, we do have, that 30-day free access where you can go, you can download the app, IWL or Interval Weight Loss at Apple or Google, or go to the intervalweightloss.com website, sign up to your free program, and start to make those necessary changes so that you do get long-term success. But just remember, this is not going to give you the short-term fix that you might be looking for. We're only interested in long-term results. And you're talking to real healthcare professionals when you're following IWL. So with IWL Plus, for instance, you will get access to an accredited healthcare professional being a dietitian. But there's so many different ways you can start to digest the information. It could be a blog you read on the website. It could be a short informational video. But I also hope today's chat has helped you, better understand, I guess, the physiology behind weight loss and how our body's working against us and not with us.
Thank you so much. So, Dr. Nicholas Foley, it's been an absolute pleasure. And thank you so much again for your time today. And I really appreciate what you've shared with us. And yeah, I'm going to actually go out and read your book as well.
Thank you, and very kind words, and thanks very much for having me on the show. Keep up the great work, Jackie.
Thank you. My pleasure. My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Revital Health Podcast. We hope you enjoy this episode. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Revital Health, as well as our website, revitalhealth.com.au, for upcoming podcasts, workshops, and speaking events. Find out about specials happening in the clinic and all the show notes and links mentioned in the podcast. Please remember that this information discussed here is general information and is not intended to diagnose or treat individuals. Please speak to your healthcare professional before embarking on any new treatments, lifestyle changes, medicines, or supplementation to assess your suitability. Have a wonderful day, and we'll see you again soon.